Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Imagined Communities, Reflections on the Origin and Spread of Nationalism by Benedict Anderson is a landmark work in political theory and modern history that explains how nations come to feel real, natural, and emotionally powerful to millions of people who will never meet. Anderson argues that a nation is an imagined community, not because it is false, but because it is created through shared stories, symbols, institutions, and media that let strangers picture themselves as part of the same collective. The book traces the historical conditions that made modern nationalism possible, paying close attention to changes in language, communication, and political authority. It also compares different regions and time periods to show why national movements emerged, where they did, and why they took distinctive forms. Written with a wide comparative lens, the book links cultural life to state formation and mass politics, offering readers a framework for understanding both the rise of nation-states and the continuing force of national identity today. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Nation as an Imagined Community. Anderson's central contribution is the claim that nations are imagined communities. People experience the nation as a deep horizontal comradeship, even though membership extends far beyond face-to-face relationships. The concept shifts attention away from arguments that treat nations as ancient ethnic facts or purely top-down inventions. Instead, Anderson highlights how collective imagination becomes socially organized and widely shared. The nation is imagined as limited because it has boundaries that separate it from other nations, and as sovereign because nationalism rose in an era when older religious and dynastic orders were losing legitimacy. It is also imagined as a community because national belonging carries a moral weight that can inspire sacrifice. This approach helps explain why nationalism feels natural once established, why it can coexist with internal inequality, and why it can motivate both liberation movements and exclusionary politics. The framework also gives readers a way to analyze flags, anthems, censuses, and public rituals as technologies that make the nation visible and emotionally compelling, turning abstract membership into a lived social reality. Secondly, print capitalism and the making of shared time, a major engine of national consciousness in Anderson's account, is print capitalism, the commercial production of books, pamphlets, and newspapers that standardized language and widened the reading public. As vernacular print spread, readers who never met could nonetheless consume similar stories and information, forming a sense of shared attention. Newspapers in particular helped create what Anderson describes as a sense of simultaneous time, where many people imagine themselves moving through the same present, reacting to the same events. This shift mattered because earlier forms of belonging were often anchored in sacred languages or dynastic hierarchies that did not require mass participation. Print markets, by contrast, rewarded publishers for reaching broader audiences in local languages, gradually turning dialects into national languages and making administrative and cultural life feel coherent within a bounded space. The result was not merely literacy, but a new infrastructure for imagining community, enabling citizens to picture fellow members scattered across a territory as part of the same story. This topic helps readers connect media ecosystems to political identity and to see how communication technologies can shape collective belonging. Thirdly, decline of sacred and dynastic orders. Anderson situates nationalism within a historical transition away from older forms of legitimacy. In earlier periods, large political communities were often organized through religious universalisms and dynastic rule. Sacred languages linked believers across regions, while monarchs claimed authority through lineage and divine sanction, holding territories together through personal sovereignty rather than national citizenship. Anderson argues that these foundations weakened over time due to social, intellectual, and political change, including shifting religious authority and the rise of new administrative and economic systems. As these older frameworks lost their ability to explain death, destiny, and political order in the same persuasive way, nationalism offered an alternative form of meaning. It provided a secular basis for continuity, linking individuals to a collective past and an imagined future. The nation could promise symbolic immortality through belonging to an enduring community, making personal lives part of a larger narrative. This analysis helps readers understand why nationalism carried such emotional intensity, and why it could replace or adapt elements once supplied by religion and monarchy. It also clarifies why modern statehood often depends on cultural narratives as much as on coercive power. Fourthly, colonial contexts and the rise of new nationalisms. One of the book's influential moves is to treat colonial settings as central to the development of modern nationalism rather than as peripheral imitations. Anderson examines how colonial administration, education, and communication networks created new social categories and new political aspirations. Colonial states often mapped and counted populations, organized territories into manageable units, and promoted certain languages and schooling systems. These practices unintentionally helped produce local elites and publics who could imagine themselves as members of a distinct community with shared grievances and shared possibilities. Nationalism in such contexts could draw on European ideas while also reshaping them in response to local histories, ethnic complexities, and anti-imperial struggles. Anderson's comparative perspective underscores that nationalisms do not appear in a single sequence from Europe outward, but emerge through interconnected processes, including migration, bureaucratic governance, and the circulation of print and political models. This topic is valuable for readers seeking to understand why post-colonial nation-building can be both empowering and fraught, and why national identity may compete with regional, religious, or linguistic affiliations. It also illuminates how state categories can harden into identities over time. Lastly, official nationalism, memory, and state-making, Anderson distinguishes popular nationalist imaginaries from what he calls official nationalism, the efforts by states and ruling groups to manage national identity from above. As mass politics expanded, elites often adopted nationalist language and symbols to preserve authority, standardize governance, and integrate diverse populations. Tools such as censuses, maps, museums, and commemorative practices become mechanisms through which the state narrates the nation, defining who belongs and how the past should be remembered. This involves selective memory, emphasizing certain heroes, events, and cultural forms while marginalizing others. The process can unify citizens, but it can also produce exclusion, hierarchy, and conflict, especially in multilingual or multi-ethnic societies. Anderson's approach helps readers see nationalism as a lived cultural system embedded in institutions, not merely an ideology held by individuals. It also clarifies how state routines shape identity over generations, making categories feel natural through repetition in schools, bureaucracies, and public ceremonies. By focusing on memory-making and administrative practice, this topic offers a practical lens for analyzing current debates about borders, citizenship, heritage, and the politics of history in many countries today. In conclusion, this book suits readers who want a deeper explanation of nationalism than slogans about patriotism or simple accounts of state formation. Students and scholars in history, politics, sociology, media studies, and post-colonial studies will find it foundational, but it is also accessible to general readers who are curious about why national identity feels so powerful in everyday life. The benefit comes from the book's framework. Once you understand the nation as an imagined community produced through language, media, institutions, and shared time, you can better interpret elections, culture wars, migration debates, and conflicts over borders and memory. It encourages more careful thinking about how identities are made and maintained, and it equips readers to question claims that national divisions are inevitable or timeless. Compared with many books that treat nationalism as either purely ideological manipulation or purely ancient ethnicity, Anderson offers a balanced, historically grounded explanation that links emotion, culture, and political economy. Its comparative scope and conceptual clarity make it worth buying as a long-term reference, not just a one-time reference, not just a one-time read. If you want a single influential lens that keeps paying off across regions and time periods, this is a strong choice. If you would like to support Benedict Anderson, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.